אתם עם SBS בעברית. לעוד סיפורים מעניינים, כנסו ל-sbs.com.au.
Sue Hample, OAM, welcome to SBS Hebrew.
Thank you.
Sue, you've been roundly acknowledged for your contributions to the Holocaust studies or Shoah studies, especially in academia at schools and at universities where you're a research and teaching associate at Monash University in Melbourne. You've received so many accolades, one of which has been the Order of the Medal of Australia. But Sue, can you tell us a little bit about your background and what led you to become involved in Holocaust education?
Yes, thank you for that question. And hello, Marielle. I guess it all starts with my father. My father's name was Andre Zelig, and he was the sole Holocaust survivor from his large family. They were all taken to Auschwitz where they were murdered, and he was 16 years old and survived, came to Australia and started a new life. He actually was very lucky because he was one of the Buchenwald boys. Buchenwald was a camp. That's where my dad was liberated, Buchenwald. And there were about 1,000 orphans who were liberated at the camp. 65 ended up coming to Australia and formed like this brotherhood, a very, very close bond. So my father came to Australia, met my mother, met up with the Buchenwald boys, and I always knew his story. It was always part of me, part of growing up. And I decided that I had to do something to make the world a better place so that what happened to my dad wouldn't happen again in the future. So that's why I went into education, because I wanted to teach the next generation to be tolerant, good people, not prejudiced, not, you know, discriminate against others, and just to be kind and better to each other.
The little birdie told me that you actually hosted the Buchenwald Ball this year. Is that true?
Yes, that's correct. I was the MC at the 80th anniversary of the liberation of Buchenwald, and I also did a podcast at the United Nations, actually.
Tell us about that.
In November 2023, I was invited by the United Nations Holocaust Outreach Program to come and do a recording with James Larson. James Larson is Australia's ambassador to the United Nations to talk about the Buchenwald boys and the home that they found in Australia. So that recording was actually released last week for the 11th of April, the 80th anniversary of the liberation of the camp.
How much contact do you now have with the UN?
Not much anymore. It was just for the one Holocaust education outreach program that I did.
So why do you believe Holocaust education remains so important today?
Look, I think it's really important to learn the lessons of the past in order to shape the future. If we ignore what happened then, and we can see it today, actually, I worry about democracy. One of the lessons from the Holocaust is that democracy has to be strengthened, because when an authoritarian political party comes to power, like the Nazi Party, we know where it can lead. So I think that Holocaust education teaches us a lot. It teaches us about the importance of democracy. It teaches us about the survivors, the resilience of the Holocaust survivors, that no matter what happened to them, they were determined to rebuild a life without hatred. They could have come to Australia or wherever they went full of hatred for life, for people, not trusting anyone. But on the contrary, their life and their message was to rebuild and to start again and to teach from the past so that that hatred they encountered would not impact us in Australia.
So in light of that, do you worry for parties like Rassemblement in France or Alternative for Deutschland in Germany, or indeed the Austrian right-wing party, or even some would argue Donald Trump in America? Do you worry about these sorts of regimes?
Absolutely. Yeah, that is a great concern, the way the world is turning. I don't know about Trump, but definitely the other right-wing leaders, far-right-wing leaders that you are talking about are dangerous. And it's interesting because at the moment, those leaders are not focusing on the Jews. They're focusing on immigrants. They're sort of very much anti-immigration. And, you know, that is one problem that they're focusing on. But eventually, they'll probably turn to the Jews as well. So I think that it's really, really concerning. And even in Australia, you know, like I think both of our governments, both the Labor Party, the Liberal Party, they're okay. I worry about the Greens. I don't think that I would worry very much if they held the balance of power in the forthcoming election.
Well, some would say that people are cozying up to the Jews for social expediency and sort of corroborating their right-wing policies and their right-wing views to the point where there's been an inversion. Even in Israel a few weeks ago, there was a summit on anti-Semitism. And Viktor Orban, the head of Hungary, went there, along with Jordan Bardella from Rassemblement Party from France. There were traditionally people from alt-right fringe parties attending this summit. What would you say to that?
Yeah, I agree, but they're all extreme, whether they're these Jewish people cozying up with, you know, the right-wing conservative parties. They're all the extreme, and I know a lot of people who are invited to that conference who didn't go because of the extreme views of that conference.
Bernard-Henri Lévy, who's the French philosopher, also renounced his invitation, I believe.
Yes, and there were a lot of academics that I knew who were invited that didn't go because they don't believe in any of that, and neither do I.
But some would argue that immigration policy, for example, in Australia, has been used and abused. They basically pinpoint that problem as part of a wider national problem that's happening in Australia for social cohesion purposes. What would you say about that? Do you think that there is enough regulation on this policy?
I'm not a politician, so I don't know. I can't really answer that question. But I honestly believe that we have to protect and safeguard Australia as a multicultural society. And, you know, I don't have a problem with migrants coming to Australia. My father was and my mother were both, they were both migrants who came to Australia. As long as these migrants adopt the Australian culture and Australian way of life and agree to this multicultural society that, you know, like when my dad came to Australia, it was a safe haven. He couldn't believe how lucky he was to set foot in this country. And they were accepted. Sure, there was a little bit of, you know, prejudice here and there, but they felt very comfortable and were able to, you know, be free in this beautiful country. So that would worry me more than anything else. I'm not against migration, but I'm definitely for keeping Australia's multicultural values.
Stephen D. Smith, someone who you respect, who is the past director of the Shoah Foundation, said the following: language shapes memory, and when memory is manipulated, justice becomes harder to reach. So in this context, what are your views on the words such as genocide and apartheid, given that some would argue they're overused words or they're misused words?
Yeah, I would agree with what Stephen Smith said there, that they are misused words. We use them so lightly and so liberally that I think we've actually forgotten what the word means. Raphael Lemkin coined the word genocide to explain what was happening to the Jews in Europe in the 1940s, because there was no word that could adequately describe what was the systematic murder of the Jews. I think today people use it, just throw it out there, and they don't even know exactly what it means.
But we live in a world where hyperbole and clickbait sell the papers. So how do you actually engage younger generations who might feel, say, disconnected from their history or from somebody else's history and remain interested?
Well, that's a really good question. I think the best way, I go back to the survivors. I'm co-president at the Melbourne Holocaust Museum. We still have 20 active survivors who come and speak to the students all the time, including Avram Goldberg, who just turned 100, who still comes every week to speak to the students. And I think when they hear from a survivor, I'm talking particularly about Holocaust survivors, but this week, this month is an important month because it's also the anniversary of the genocide in Rwanda against the Tutsis. So, and I've travelled to Rwanda. And when you speak to a survivor of any of those atrocities, I think it makes you understand things better instead of saying just trite things.
So two very, very different examples of actual genocides. But do you think that there's crossover in the impact it has on the survivors?
Yes, well, definitely, you know, like the trauma that they feel in, you know, like losing their family, having to come to terms with life again, definitely. And I know that Yad Vashem, who is, you know, Israel's Holocaust Memorial Institution, they worked with the in Kigali with the Rwandan Genocide Institute in order to set up a proper museum that would tell the stories of the survivors. So I think that the survivors are really the key, and when we lose them, I worry that, you know, their memory recedes into history, and then we don't have them as a reminder about what happened in the past.
Yeah, so just on that, what are the dangers of Holocaust denial or distortion in today's world?
So today, Holocaust denial is not really practiced, not much. There's enough evidence from the perpetrators.
Just to clarify, is it illegal?
Oh, here, yeah, it is. That on the International Holocaust Remembrance Alliance, and we've got definitions of Holocaust denial and Holocaust distortion. Holocaust distortion is a problem. And you mentioned before some of those right-wing nationalistic governments And for a lot of these governments, they've changed the changed history and changed how we see history. And they're trying to say, and Poland did have a right-wing government. Today it has changed. Donald Tusk is much more centrist in it and very good. But under the previous government that was in Poland, they wanted to play down the role that Poles played in carrying out the Holocaust against their neighbours. There were a lot of stories about Polish neighbours. And they wanted to emphasise not the bad things that Polish people did, but the good things, because Poland also has a large number of the righteous among nations people who saved Jews. So they downplayed all of those parts, but they overplayed the role of the people who helped. So I think that that's what Holocaust distortion is about. So we want to tell it the way it happened.
I mean, my only concern is Holocaust fatigue more than anything, because there's so much material still on the Holocaust. But obviously it's so important to hold on to that, because that's the only thing that keeps that memory alive.
Yeah, and Marielle, Holocaust fatigue is a big problem, because surveys that have been conducted recently, whether it be in America, in Australia, in Europe, less and less people even know what happened during the Holocaust. You know, I'm going to go to Poland next week. That's what I was going to tell you. I've been invited to lead a delegation of 9 bipartisan Victorian politicians go to Poland, and they will be marching on Holocaust Remembrance Day with 7,000 people from all around the world, including 80 Holocaust survivors, probably the last to be marching on Holocaust Remembrance Day in Auschwitz. And I've been asked to lead this group on this very special occasion to commemorate the 80th anniversary of the liberation and the 80 years since the end of World War II.
Wow. And does that make you feel closer to your father's history?
Yeah, definitely. Every time I go there, I take a picture of him with his family. As I told you, he's the only survivor. And I remember I go to the places, you know, where they were incarcerated and later murdered. And I often think about the past. And yeah.
And when you do go to Auschwitz, do you still feel the reverberations of gloom, for lack of a better word?
Yeah, I think every human should visit Auschwitz once in their lifetime.
Why?
Auschwitz has 2 million visitors a year, by the way, so which is very good. But I think everybody has to go, because I can tell you, I can teach about the Holocaust and the dehumanization and the terrible things that happened. But unless you actually see it with your own eyes, you can't comprehend the scale, the enormity, the evil, the perpetrators. So going to a place like Auschwitz really brings it home. And I've organised for the politicians, and I just wanted to emphasise that they're bipartisan. They're from the National Party, they're from the Labor Party, they're from the Liberal Party, and they want to go and learn about what happened during the Holocaust and see where anti-Semitism, which starts with words, we talked about that before, it starts with words, but incremental steps ended up with most of the Jews being murdered there in the gas chambers of Auschwitz.
Have you seen that movie, A Real Pain, with Kieran Culkin? Yeah, what did you think?
No, it was cute. Okay. I thought it was, it was a good film. I've actually told the politicians if they want something lighthearted, they should watch it on the plane on the way to Poland.
And what's your hope for people to take away from your stories, and what more can you share on this for these kids that probably aren't as acquainted with this history from 1945?
I just think you have to learn from the past. I mean, for me, it's obviously the Holocaust, but there are lots of lessons that we can learn from past history that I think we have to take seriously, because we take so much for granted today. You know, we've been in a very fortunate situation because the world changed, the world order changed after World War II. The United Nations was reborn. There were genocide conventions, Declaration of Human Rights. And we've been very lucky to live in this relatively safe 70 to 80 year period. So I think that we have to remember to protect and guard our democracy and not to take things for granted, and to listen to the words of all those survivors, be they Holocaust, be they from other genocides, because things can change if we're not careful.
Sue Hampel, thank you so much for joining us on SBS Hebrew.
Thank you. עקבו אחרינו והפיצו אותנו דרך דף הפייסבוק שלנו.